Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast. I am super excited today to talk about one of my favorite things in the world, ice cream. And the person we have on today, she's an American ice cream maker and entrepreneur. She has a New York Times best-selling book. She's an author. She's from the Midwest. She's turning ice cream and dairy-free ice cream and dairy ice cream, every kind of ice cream, into dreams and making things happen. Jenny Brittenbauer, how are you doing?
I am doing just great. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm hanging in there. I'm in Florida right now. Usually I live in the Midwest, so I live in Michigan. You said you're from the Midwest. What part of the Midwest are you from?
I'm from Columbus, so just down the road from you guys. And also I'm not like a big football like crazy person like so many people here. So the Michigan-Ohio thing don't worry about it.
Okay, good. That could have started this off really bad.
Right.
Let's go. Oh, yeah.
We're good.
Good.
Well, listen, but not like that.
You did attend Ohio State University and you studied history and fine art. So what were those early days? Because now you're making ice cream and you're a true entrepreneur. So what were those days like in college and what really made you decide that's what you wanted to get into that?
Well, it's funny. I didn't get in when I first applied because I had barely squeaked by in high school. I mean, straight D's. And most of that was because I had to make it up in summer school. I mean, I was a terrible student unless it was a class that I loved. So of course, Ohio State said, yeah, no thanks. But I appealed it just because it didn't occur to me to like accept their word on that. And then they let me in. And I appealed it kind of explaining what I was actually doing while I was getting straight D's in high school, which was my mother had had a baby. And so I was really working on it. She was very sick. And I was working a lot. I loved working in the French bakery where I worked. So they let me in, which was amazing. And then I learned just so much. I mean, Ohio State is a massive place full of like any class that you want to take. So of course, I did not get on the track for a degree. I just started taking everything I wanted to take. So it was art history, art. I mean, I would beg, an upper level course professor to let me into their vampire mythology class or the French Revolution. So just everything that I wanted to study. Perfuming, I had a friend in the chemistry department. So all of that was, I think, in sort of a roundabout way, how I found ice cream.
Yeah, little ingredients, little things that you're doing, art, everything you're getting excited for. So you're going to Ohio State University, you appealed it. You had some things you were dealing with as a high school student. You said your mom was sick and you were working. What exactly were you helping provide and put food on the table and pay the bills because things were going on at home?
I wasn't paying the bills for our family, but I was paying my way. So I was buying all of my own stuff, my car, I had a 1986 Chevy Chevette, which was great because I could do most of the work on it myself. So I was just paying my own way. And my sister was as well. And we lived in a sort of more affluent neighborhood, but we lived in a very old apartment. And I lived in the basement, which was like my haven, but it was a stone basement from a 1920s townhouse, which is pretty fun. I loved it down there. I loved it. But yeah, I loved work. I loved the idea that for me was freedom and that you could work and, just keep, I wanted to be a grown up when I was like 12. I was ready to go. By the time I was 16, I got my first real job, but I mean, I had been working already in the neighborhoods that I was working in.
And you were working because you had to, you didn't have a choice. And, you get a lot of people today, they don't want to work, but that really instilled what we're about to talk about, you being an entrepreneur and building your business. You had a work ethic at such a young age, which I think is so key. And I think we lack that right now.
And I got to work for incredible people. I mean, there was this one guy, Jody, who was ex-military, who was just wonderful. He was an incredible leader, but just a manager in a restaurant. And he was probably in his 20s when I was a teenager. And I thought he was like, an old guy. But I got to work for some really incredible people. And this French family, they were all entrepreneurs. All the businesses that I worked for were very small. There was an ice cream shop and then a French bakery. So yeah, I really did get that. And we try to give that to the people who work in our shops now, especially well, anyone, but especially young people. But young people, yeah, they're not getting jobs like we used to.
Well, you stated you always knew your first job would be at an ice cream shop, important part of your town's culture. Break down how you came to the intuition so early on, especially after releasing that ice cream that was the perfect carrier of scent during the perfume peddling days.
I had worked at an ice cream shop when I was, I knew I was going to get an ice, I don't know why, but when I was like younger, I always loved ice cream. And it wasn't just ice cream, because it was actually not my favorite dessert. It was like my favorite moment, right? It was just, I just thought of it differently. I'm very much a sweet person and always was. My family is Midwesterners, you know, are. But somehow I just knew I really wanted to work at an ice cream shop as my first job. And one happened to open in my neighborhood when I was 15 that summer. And so I would walk to work and I loved it. But what happened was, I think that because I was studying all these different things that interested me, one of them was perfuming. And I was looking into ancient perfumes because I didn't like synthetic perfumes for the most part. And so I had studied a lot of that stuff and I understood like the melting point of fats, because ancient perfumers used fats that were solid at room temperature, but liquid on skin at body temperature. So I understood that kind of stuff. And because I had like studied art, studied this kind of perfuming and worked in an ice cream shop and then a French bakery, all of those things came together. When I made my first ice cream, it was like, oh my gosh, butterfat is the perfect carrier of scent. Butterfat melts below body temperature. I remembered my grandmother saying, don't put the onion next to the butter because it will absorb the scent of the onion. That's what ice cream making is. It's not junk food in ice cream. I mean, yes, that's fun too. It's not giant chunks. Yes, that's fun too. It's the ice cream itself that's really beautiful and that you can use to tell stories. And then that was this aha moment for me. And you could use ice cream to tell stories, to connect people, the things that I was doing in art. And that ice cream could be a lot, I thought, better in America. Being from the Midwest, growing up near dairy farms with access to incredible agriculture, that was just sort of, I was like, this is going to be so easy. It's going to be amazing in like my 22-year-old self. And of course, 25 years later, you know, I now know how difficult that vision was, but.
Building it from the ground up too. I've done some research that you had some bumps along the way, but, you know, I always say that if you want to make everybody happy, you need to sell ice cream. That's what I've always said, because running a business is hard and you're never going to make everybody happy. Now, I think what you do makes everybody happy externally, but there's difficulties internally in your organization sometimes, having to make tough decisions, protecting the brand, you know, being an entrepreneur for something that you love, because obviously this is a passion of yours. And the way you just presented it, it's not really about the sweets. It's not your favorite dessert, but it's that memory. When I think of ice cream, I think of certain memories of when I went with my grandpa to go get, you know, two scoops at Baskin Robbins back in the early 80s, or, you know, different times I'm at the ice cream truck. You have these memories that are tied with ice cream. When you started opening your business and you had these struggles, what was your why and what kept you pressing through to continue to build?
My why in the earliest days was, I'm hell-bent on a life of freedom. I mean, I grew up with alternative thinkers. I had not a perfect childhood, but I was given the gift of independent thinking. And like that was, it was just something that I never questioned. I know that I could not work for somebody else. So I knew that I needed to, like, either through art or entrepreneurship or both or whatever, however that was going to be. The other why for me was I was a deep introvert. I mean, I always have been. And service, and actually that first job, it never stopped me, but like that first job that I took at the ice cream shop, I learned that I can kind of put myself and my anxieties aside and serve others. And I like bloomed and blossomed in that environment. It's like safety. There's like a counter, but I can be, you know, who I want to be. I can put on this like character, but something that lived inside of me and make somebody else feel good. And that was kind of big deal to me. It still is. That's still the lens through which I see everything. So for me, it was almost like the early days, the why was, this is what I need to do. This is, you know, focused on me. This is going to be my career. The why I learned over Scream, which was my first business, and then going into Jenny's, I learned how people interact with ice cream. And that became because I worked the counter for 10 years. So this is what's so interesting to me about start small and build entrepreneurship versus the like unicorn pitch competition bullshit, I think, that happens, which is fine for some businesses. But most businesses in America still are the start small and build. And we need to be teaching that and showing people that that's actually the way to do it, because that's how you break this system. That's how you break things. You have to learn from the inside slowly. And that's what I did. I learned that why of like, oh, this is how people interact. This is the standard that people want. This is, you know, what people are looking for in flavor. I learned about that salty sweet combination really early, that that just is a button for people, because I was there 12 hours a day, almost every day of the week. So the why became to bring people together, to get to know each other better, right? Because that's what people are doing there. And that's what ice cream can do. It's the it's like this catalyst. You actually see yourself in your flavor a little bit and introduce a little bit of yourself to someone else when you're there. And I've seen this hundreds of thousands of times right in front of me in my life. And so that became this like otherworldly passion that I then had, because that just is so cool. It's so beautiful.
Well, I love that you talked about, you know, building it slowly. I think that's key. You're right. You can't just expect to get to the top of the, I have a thing behind me, right? It says, take the stairs. There's no elevator in life. It's the same thing in business. It's everything. If you cheat it and you think you're going to get to, like, you're doing 50 million in revenue, if you think you do that overnight, it's broken. Something bad's going to happen. You have to grow correctly. You have to learn. You have to fail. You have to learn. You have to fail. It just makes that foundation so much stronger as you're building the layers of your company. Otherwise, your company is one bad week, one bad month away if you just get there too quick and you didn't learn the tangible stuff internally that you have to create that foundation. And you just talked about that. And you're right. Entrepreneurs miss that. Some entrepreneurs miss that.
A lot do right now. I mean, you see so many brands popping up, and it's actually really easy to blow up for a year or two or five, especially when you have a lot of money behind your brand, because you can buy, I mean, you can really just buy your customers, but what you can't buy is, or you buy sales, but you can't buy that like community and loyalty that people feel. And so once that money dries up, you see so many companies just, they're just gone, you know, once the money dries up. And it really does take more to build that kind of loyalty and trust. It's really about trust with customers. And of course, ice cream is a little bit different than some other things. You know, ice cream is just, it really is about personality and trust and, you know, storytelling and things like that, maybe even more than other things. But you'll see that in other companies. I mean, look at how long Patagonia has been around. I mean, they've been, you know, I just love their story, but it was they have another sort of start small and build, like, you know, there's a lot of brands that just take a really long time to build. And you like, suddenly they pop up, but when you really look deeper, they've been going for 20 years.
Yeah, I think that's so important to have that foundation. So you're breaking 50 million in revenue and you're about to hit your 50 store mark in 2021. What's that like? And where are all these stores at? Are they all over the US? Are they just in the Midwest?
They are all over the US. We started out kind of going where we had pockets of fans who were buying our ice creams on our website. So we started our e-com business in 2004. And so we were able to sort of track that and see where people were, you know, because once somebody has it, then it starts to grow in an area. And so LA and New York were always our biggest ones. We still aren't in New York, which is so funny to me, but it's just a complicated city to be in. But that's one of the reasons we ended up in LA.
There's more reasons than just complicated to not be in New York, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of, I mean, I obviously love New York still, but you know, yes.
It's hard to do anything there.
It's really hard. And then when we see like Alpharetta, Georgia, doing just the communities coming out for us in Alpharetta, Georgia. And you know, how many Alpharetta, Georgias are there across the United States? Well, a lot, actually. So it is really amazing for me to see this. And also at a point in my career where I can kind of show up and give high fives and love to the people who are in our company, in our stores, the leaders and the truck drivers and the producers and all of those people, because they're all better at doing all the work than I am. And I can show up with my ideas and flavor ideas and marketing ideas and things like that and help, you know, but I'm not there to manage anybody at all. And so I have like a really beautiful, almost like I'm sort of a spiritual leader now at Jenny's.
Yeah, you're the vision. You're leading the charge and giving them the ideas. And I totally get that. That's my third business I've built, and that's where I'm at. I'm not on the daily grind as much, but I like to travel and give high fives and show love. And I think that's awesome because they need that. They need to know that you're relatable and they need to know that you support the mission and the brand and that what they're doing is important. I think that's so cool. So the 50 stores, are they franchise type model or is it all corporate?
It's all us. I struggle with the word corporate so much, but anyway, it's all us. And that's really important to us because it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, we have very high standards. You know, we're like defrosting our freezers once a week. That's just like, I mean, I worked at another ice cream shop. I visit ice cream shops. That's a really hard thing to do. I mean, that's, you know, we do all these little things just to keep everything kind of as perfect as we can. And, you know, I don't trust that to anybody else, at least not yet.
You know, you had a cookbook that you put out. It was called Homemade Ice Cream Making Bible. And it won the James Beard Foundation Award, also was a New York Times bestseller. Talk about that book. And what was it like to go from Jenny, the entrepreneur ice cream maker, to author?
Well, it was so interesting. I went to New York. We had a bunch of publishers interested. It went to auction, which was very cool. You know, I'm still sort of just an ice cream maker from a market in the Midwest or in Ohio, you know, and I felt a little, honestly, talked down to by a lot of the publishers. It was sort of like, how did we, you know, like, I can't believe this is happening in Ohio. You know what I mean? That kind of attitude, which is really infuriating. But the book went to auction. It was great. I ended up going with an incredible publisher. And I think it was sort of like, this is really sweet. This is really sweet. It's going to be a sweet little ice cream book. But the way that I saw it was, it's service. I'm going to give everyone who has this book the ability to make American, what I call hard body ice cream or scoop shop ice cream, right? So you can pull it out of the freezer within a couple of minutes or right from the freezer, roll it into a ball with your zero scoop, put it on top of a cone and walk down the street. Home ice cream recipes, usually you can't freeze them solid because the freezers that you're using aren't great. And the recipe just isn't, doesn't have the elasticity that we can get with the pasteurization, homogenization. And in the ice cream world, a lot of times stabilizers and emulsifiers, we don't use those at Jenny's. So I committed to like making a recipe that mimicked the body and texture that we have at Jenny's with our incredible machines at home on, you know, a little Cuisinart, and achieved that. And then from there, it was like, okay, I'm going to give you all my ice cream flavors, but you can mix and match. The point is, you're the ice cream maker now. And because of that, that sort of like, it wasn't just an ego project where I'm just putting out, these are all the flavors I've done and you know, whatever, but I really wanted it to work for people. And I think that's why that little book won the James Beard Award, got a full review in the Wall Street Journal, and was a New York Times bestseller twice. I mean, you know, and still is going strong. So I call it freestyling. And so we just released a flavor with Dolly Parton, which was just incredible. But, you know, we sold out super fast. And so I just put out the challenge. I bet you can freestyle it using the recipes in my book. And so people come in, they give me my recipe, right? Yeah, I freestyled it using the gravel recipe with here. I substituted pretzels and I used cream cheese recipe and I used your strawberry sauce recipe. So you can like mix and match, which is really fun. So it was super cool, but it was not that different from how I approach business, which is serve people, be of value, create value for people.
So important you said serve people. And in today's world, ice cream makes everybody happy. That's what I meant by, if you ever want to make everybody happy, sell ice cream. And I don't know anybody that doesn't like ice cream, or you have sherbet and you have dairy-free ice cream. When you first opened, how many flavors did you have? And then what made you start to move to create the dairy-free products?
Well, I think of each style of ice cream as like a different platform. So we have like, what I think of as like our sherbets are really made with buttermilk and fresh yogurt that we have made for us on a like fifth generation dairy. But that brings tartness to, it's like a lighter, tart, very creamy, always fruit platform. And then we have, of course, sorbets, and we have, of course, ice cream. And then there's non-dairy, it's actually coconut cream. So then there's those, and then there are flavors within those. And so, you know, you've got to sort of touch on all the different styles that people love, a fruit, a chocolate, a nut, you know, a buttercream or whatever. And so super fun. But, you know, when we first started, it was like too many flavors. I mean, I couldn't stop. And actually for many years, part of the, I think the art of it now is choosing what we know people are going to go crazy for and making something that's just, that just really has a reason to exist and isn't just a fun experiment for me, you know, which is like my first decade of ice cream making, I think. And it was super fun, but that's how I learned, I think, what people really love. And
so you got addicted to making flavors and you had like 60 flavors at one time. You're like, okay, this is too many. We need to shrink that down to make sure we're giving people exactly what they're craving, right?
it was probably more like 35 flavors a day. But then like when you look at the year, even as we started to grow, when you look at the year, it might've been 75 flavors, which is really complicated for a company who's not buying from, you know, one big supplier, but two dozen farmers and makers and producers and suppliers, you know, who each have to like, you know, have a safety, you know, all of the different processes.
Well, it's hard to scale when you're that wide, you can't scale. It's hard to duplicate that.
And to make that many flavors, and then also to have that much inventory, because there's going to be, there's like the blockbusters, there's the middle, and then there's the bottom sellers, right? And actually the bottom sellers are some of the most interesting ones and the ones that people, that certain people love. So you can't not make those, but if you have too many, you know, it's just a delicate balance of how to do it. And you don't want to have like all of this leftover. We used to actually have a sale like at the end of the year or a couple times a year to sell all the old, the pints that nobody wanted or that we made too much of. And it's not sustainable.
Yeah. The over inventory, like, you know, buy one, get one now because we've made too many. So I like that. I'm a butter pecan person, right? My wife's a sherbet or sorbet. My daughters are vanilla, but I like the nut stuff. Sometimes I like fruit. You guys have a butter pecan dairy free?
No. Ooh, well, we have like a sticky toffee pudding that has like, or it's a pecan sticky bun.
Oh, okay. I bet that's good.
So that would be like the one. It's like buttery caramel pecans.
Yeah, that's down my alley. I kid because I work out every day, but I don't gain weight and I don't lose weight. I play for a tie because I have an ice cream problem. And that's legit. I literally have an ice cream problem. You guys need to get one in Birmingham, Michigan. Or I'll just order it online. But Birmingham, Michigan is popping and there's ice cream everywhere.
Where's Birmingham, Michigan?
It's north of Detroit. It's like the bubble. So it is a very bougie city, but everything is there. And it's where all the, you know, the motor company CEOs and, you know, from Ford, GM, a lot of the football players, but everybody lives in Birmingham, Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, which is like 25 miles north of Detroit. It's like a little LA. It's a bubble.
That's awesome. Okay. So I love Detroit. I have lots of friends in Detroit and I'm only 3 hours away. Plus I'm a car person. So I've got this modded out GT, it's a Golf R Volkswagen, but I will drive those straightaways up to Detroit as fast as I possibly can. I'm a Detroit, like I love it. I'll drive up just for pizza. I have been known to do that. So
it's great pizza in Detroit.
I don't know. I'd love to be in Detroit. Give me more to get up there.
I'm telling you, I'm going to have to order some of this. So listen, you also in 2019, you published your third cookbook. Tell us about that.
Well, the 2019, it was a, again, it's back to, I want everybody to have the joy of making and sharing and eating and ideating ice cream, because that's what's so cool about ice cream. Ice cream makers sort of define the moment in their shops. So the book that we put out in 2019 is like a little book, but it has like recipes from my other books in it so that it can be just like a little, you know, you can always have it on hand, or, you know, put it in your vacation house or whatever you want to do. Give it as a gift with the ice cream machine, but it's just it's a cute little book.
What about with COVID last year? How did you guys overcome that? Did you see significant drops in business? Did you grow? Because some companies either grew and some companies struggled. How did you guys do through COVID? And what adjustments did you make as an entrepreneur?
Well, we ended up growing, but that was not at all obviously guaranteed. None of us thought that. We got together about a year ago. We're in May now, so it would have been about a little more than a year ago. Really panicked and knowing that our shops, which were 70% of our business or 60 or 70% of our business, were going to be decimated. And so what I think is so cool about, and it's not the first time we've been in crisis, I think it's like these moments really make you. And so we came together, we created a council, which is not just our sort of executive team or the leadership team, but a few other people who had very specific roles, communication roles or shops managing roles or whatever. And we created like a 5 different path plan and kind of chose the best one. For companies, you know, we're not a small company, but we're also not a massive company. So we had some protection because we have 3 channels, which is great. But also, you know, it's a very delicate thing. When we had to choose early on, this is one of the things that we did, you know, our leaders were saying, you know, America's going to be back by July 1st, you know, the 4th of July, we're going to be back. And I don't think any of us really believed that. But at the same time, if we had been back, things would have been different, right? We as an ice cream company had to choose, are we going to make pints because we can deliver those? Or are we going to make buckets of ice cream for scooping? And so this is just one of many decisions we had to make. But you can imagine the shifts that have to happen to put all of our production into pints, right? Now we've got to get pints printed. We've got to do all this fast. We've got to get them moved around. We got to find people to do it. But we did that. And if we had put everything into pints and we had been back by July 4th, we would have had nothing to scoop. So we had to make these decisions before we could really know and plan the future. One of the, you know, in business, as you know, like planning your future is about consistency, right? You got to be able to look into the future and make accurate predictions. And we lost that ability, and all of us did in COVID. So Jenny's is doing great. We figured it out. I mean, there's a lot of things that we did. Obviously, first thing we did was to keep people safe, period. Our team had to be safe in order to keep our customers safe. And then we wanted to bring people back to work who, you know, were furloughed or whatever. Those two things became our like driving mission, and we survived. But I am like just such an advocate for Main Street and small business, because that's where I came from, because most of my life was spent in that role, living paycheck to paycheck, knowing what it's like, you know, to go to work every day in a small shop and or a restaurant or whatever. So I've been trying to do some work in federal policy. I do volunteering for Small Business for America's Future, trying to figure out federal policy for that. I was actually working on the Biden campaign and the COVID response in small business, his Small Business Council. So I'm really trying to figure out how to assist, because I know that life very well, because I know a lot of our businesses truly are suffering. So many of them have either gone dormant or out of business in this year. And I'm feeling for that. And I know that if Jenny's had been in almost any other time in our trajectory, it would have been a much worse scenario.
Yeah, that's really a cool story how you guys had, you know, pivoted and changed and adjusted and created that council. I mean, you know, the listeners out there and the viewers, they're, you know, a lot of them are new entrepreneurs or they're wanting to become an entrepreneur. They need to understand that nothing's easy. And we're always challenged with these difficulties that, like COVID. And you either, you know, I have a saying, you're either like a cow and you run away from the storm and it chases you, or you're a buffalo and you run through it and you adjust and you go through it and figure out what you're going to do. And that's what you guys did. You created that council. You empowered people in your company to help make educated decisions on the facts and data that you had. And then you adjusted and it worked out for everybody. More people were getting jobs. More people were buying product. Everybody was safe. It's a win-win. You know, we did the same thing in our business and we grew tremendously, but we had those meetings. We didn't have a council, but we were spending hours upon hours upon hours with attorneys and health departments and jurisdictions. And I'm sure you guys are doing the same. And it's, are we open? Are we not open? What's the deal there? And it was chaotic. And the companies and the entrepreneurs that didn't step up and face it, a lot of them just ran from it. That's kind of what happened. You know, they got intimidated by it. And I think listeners need to know that you have to take these things head on. And you have to, if you don't make a decision, you're going to collapse. You got to try something. And that's what you guys did. You bet down and tried it and it worked. Had you not done anything, you know, it could have been completely different.
Absolutely. I'm a really big, every challenge, you have to stop and face it. You have to look at it. And you have to act. I mean, choosing not to act is also acting. You know, I mean, so that's that. You learn, I've learned in all of these years that you really don't advance from your successes. You really don't. You kind of stay the same. You advance from the failures or the hardship, right? And the other thing is, I'm a big like sci-fi fantasy person. Also, I didn't study business. I studied sci-fi and fantasy. You know, I just decided that I was Luke Skywalker or whatever, and you know, whatever. And I was going to have this like adventure. But there's so many lessons from these tales. And one of them is that I always go back to explain in resilience, I guess, and resourcefulness is the Princess Bride. You remember the Princess Bride? You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I have.
The forest that they have to get through. And they're like three big obstacles in the forest and they hit all of them in like the first 5 minutes and no one's ever made it through alive. And Buttercup is like, we're never going to make it through. And Wesley's like, no, now we know how. It's the failures that give you the, I think that sort of confidence to keep going forward because now you know how. And in fact, other people might turn around. Don't turn around, keep going because now you have something that other people have not been able to get, you know, and those are, but the successes almost like you just forget about those, you know?
It's hard to celebrate them because we're ready for the next challenge. And that's what makes us stronger. It makes us better focused. I mean, we have a motto in our company. It's every day's a playoff game. right? We did great today. That's great, but we got tomorrow. So we got to stay grinding. You know, it's small wins every day. It's never a huge celebration. And it sounds like you guys kind of stay the same mindset of this is how we keep growing. We got to stay focused and continue to do what it is. And anytime you fail, you learn. That's a fact. You're right. When you stay stagnant, you just win all the time. You get bored. You're not growing. You're not prepared for anything catastrophic that can change everything. I mean, we got to prepare as entrepreneurs by taking those challenges head on. I want to ask you also for the inspiring entrepreneurs tuning in today that have a passion but are hesitant to pull the trigger to chase their dreams, what three keys of success or ideas or bold steps would you give out? Three, like three bold statements for entrepreneurs out there. Because you being not only doing ice cream, which makes everybody smile, but you worked your butt off in high school. You're a female entrepreneur. I'm friends with Kara Golden, who I had on the show as well, who did Hint Water. You guys kind of have a similar story. I have three daughters and a son, but I love to see female entrepreneurs because I think they're way more creative. And I love when they're bossing and just grinding and doing what they need to do. Like, I love that. It inspires me because I've got three daughters that I want to take on the world and do big things. So I get excited about that. But what would you say for the listeners out there? Three different bold statements, if they're just sitting in the mud, to really take a chance and do what they want to do.
First of all, you know, being an underdog, being the one that nobody believes in is actually rocket fuel. So let that fuel you. Get mad at it. I mean, let that fuel you. That's probably been more important to me in my life than money, for sure. I mean, most of my life, I didn't have any money. All I had was that rocket fuel of people thinking that I couldn't do it, underestimating me. Just start small and build. I could not be a bigger advocate for that. You can start where you are with a dollar and build what we built. You can. It is not easy, but you can do it. And hold on to your ownership. Do not go straight to the top and get all that money, right? Because then you're just working for somebody else. If you're a true entrepreneur, you've got that like thing and you know it when you look in the mirror and you're like, I've got that thing, right? That thing that I can't work for other people. So entrepreneurship is not about going and getting a whole bunch of money and then being in service to those people. Entrepreneurship is about being in service to your vision, your freedom, and your customers, right? So get out on the street and sell something. You know what I mean? Love somebody, make somebody's day, create value, and you know, start small and build, hold on to ownership, and let the people who say you can't do it be your rocket fuel.
I feel like we might be related because that's exactly what I'm always preaching. I love that you stated that. You said, listen, you're not an entrepreneur because you want to be rich. You're not chasing money. You're chasing freedom. You're chasing empowerment. You're trying to serve people. You want to not be handcuffed into your own cage. You want to have that opportunity to shine and do things for others. And that's exactly what you just said. That's awesome. And that's true entrepreneurship. And that is someone who's built it from the bottom up. That is somebody who's had those struggles, who overcame adversity, who found a way to, you know, like even with COVID, let's put a council together. Let's get through this. You know, leadership, without leadership, there's chaos. And so true leaders need to learn how to put the weight on their shoulders and make decisions. And I think the listeners out there heard something really great here from Jenny. Now, how can they find you and your store and what are your two favorite flavors that they need to check out?
Oh my goodness. I want to add one more thing because I'm going to add you a fourth because I think it's just as important. Know your values. I just think that you have to do that because your values are what will get you through everything when your back is against the wall and you have no other choice. Just know what they are. My two favorite flavors have been the same for a really long time. Brown butter almond brittle. It's actually inspired by Roald Dahl and his favorite flavor from Norway when he was growing up. He wrote about it when he was a grown up. And I read it and created this flavor. I've never been to Norway. I want to go and taste it. It's still a very popular flavor there. But anyway, it's called Kroken in Norway and it's brown butter almond brittle in my interpretation of his writing. And then the other one is actually our rainbow. We have like this rainbow. It's kind of buttermilk. It's super creamy, super tart. It's like the best rainbow sherbet you've ever had, ever. You can only get it in stores. So I'm sorry about that. You'll have to pop down to Columbus or Chagrin Falls, which is not too far from you. Yeah.
Absolutely. That sounds great. Now, how could they find you and your business?
You can find it at jennys.com. I spell it J-E-N-I because I'm from a generation of a million Jenny or billion Jennies, I think. So I changed the spelling in seventh grade, JENIS.com. You can find me on Instagram, Jenny Britton Bauer. I love Instagram. I have a little community there. And of course, Jenny's Ice Creams are also all over social media. And we have so much fun with that.
And we will have all the links on the bottom there. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your inspiration and encouragement out there for the listeners, for all the underdogs out there. And I'm super excited to check out your ice cream. And I'm going to hit you up. I'm going to order some ice. I'm going to hit you up on you coming up to Detroit and checking out that place and maybe getting a store up in Birmingham.
I'm there.
All right. Thank you. Bam. And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. True Underdog. Bam.